Continuing our discussion of yesterday's sexual assault hearing in the Senate Judiciary Committee over the actions of Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh, we're joined now in KPFA studios by Soraya Shamali. She is director of the Women's Media Center Speech Project and just out with an incredibly topical new book entitled Rage Becomes Her, The Power of Women's Anger. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
The thesis of your book is that in our society and many others, women are punished for expressing anything but a very narrow range of emotions. Rage is off the table. What did you think of the contrast between the two witnesses who testified in the Senate Judiciary Committee?
Well, I thought it was a pretty pitch-perfect example of that exact idea, that women have a very narrow communications path that they have to adhere to. If they leverage emotionality, like crying, for example, which Kavanaugh did in spades, they're considered irrational, confused, muddled, that they're not logical. Whereas for a man, there's sort of this core assumption of rationality, and tears actually make him sensitive and more sympathetic. It doesn't actually impugn his thinking the way emotionality would for a woman. And so anger, as the primary emotion associated with men and masculinity, really becomes the property of men in a way that women cannot leverage politically.
Mm. Brett Kavanaugh did not have just like one emotional register yesterday. He went from like the Incredible Hulk trying to smash everything in the opening minutes of his speech to sobbing when he mentioned his daughter saying that they should pray for Christine Blasey Ford.
Yes. And when he mentioned his father, I think one of the earliest points of his sustaining tears actually was when he talked about his father's calendar, which I thought was sort of interesting because he was sort of virtue signaling this filial masculine legacy. My father had a calendar and I admire my father and it was his affectionate thing and I did it too, while starting to cry, which is an interesting juxtaposition, right? Because there's a certain assumption of maybe weakness or femininity in crying. And so in initiating crying, he also doubled down on the idea that he had a patriarchal lineage.
Yeah. What's interesting to me is kind of the shorthand for socialized gender roles has been that women can't be tough.
Right.
Men can't be vulnerable. And yet there seem to be quite a number of male public figures in politics who are quite comfortable with letting the waterworks come out. And a lot of them seem to be men who have come from the Christian right. Mm-hmm. Is this like an emotional register that I don't understand?
You know, I think it's very interesting, right? Because there's all of this hyper-masculinity that's part of the sex segregation of that world. And it's interesting in this case in particular, excuse me, because clearly none of these men was going to question Ford. They actually, it's almost as though women have to talk to women, so we're going to have this woman prosecutor here. But within the context of all of that sex segregation, as you say, there are these behaviors that cross genders. And I'm not sure, actually, how they register that as a political versus a personal affect. Am I personally like this and I'm just letting people in to see a little bit of what I think of as personal? Or am I actually using this in a political way? Because so much of the politics of the right has to do with these assertions of masculinity and these entitlements of masculinity. And being sensitive or being weak isn't, as you say, traditionally one of those things. And I'm not sure what that signals.
Yeah. Part of your analysis is not just that women are constrained to a very narrow range of acceptable emotional expression, but that in fact there is a certain transformative possibility in deploying women's rage righteously.
Yes.
What does that look like? What does that mean?
So actually, the subtitle of the book is The Power of Women's Anger, and we didn't qualify it as positive or negative because the power of the anger can be immensely negative in our lives. It's so sanctioned in some places that it really does end up hurting us as people, our bodies, our mental health. And so the idea that it's negative makes a lot of sense because we experience it negatively and as powerlessness. But in fact, anger in and of itself isn't inherently negative. It's really, as Audre Lorde said many years ago, full of information. And so the transformative aspect of it is in understanding the connection between anger and information. It's a signal emotion. It's actually a survival emotion. It's telling you that something is wrong and that something has to be done. And so if you can equally think of anger as connected to fairness and justice and empathy and compassion and a quest for social justice, then you can think about using it in different ways. But too often what happens is immediately people feel that the anger, just the feeling of anger, is transgressive as opposed to the behaviors that might be associated with it.
So instead of looking to the feeling of anger as the beginning of an exploration or a change, it's something to run from.
Absolutely. And honestly, for women, that makes sense because the display of anger often results in penalty. And so, for example, we know that from a study just this year, which is fascinating, an angry male lawyer is more respected, considered more credible. Jurors are more likely to find in his favor if he expresses righteous anger on behalf of his client. But a woman doing the same thing is considered less credible, less trustworthy, not as logical or rational. And so the double standard is real. And so our concern that our anger will bounce back on us isn't made up. I mean, there are many examples, and that really starts when we're very young. And if you happen to also have multiple intersecting identities that compound the problem. So if you're a Black girl, for example, the beginnings of, you know, sort of angry Black woman stereotypes, so they start in kindergarten. You know, little Black girls are policed for their tone and their sassiness and their belligerence. For behaviors that in a young white boy might be seen as leadership. So they're five times more likely to be suspended or disciplined or expelled from school than a white peer. And that comes from the difference in assessments of this display of any kind of emotion.
We're speaking to Soraya Shamali. Her new book just out is Rage Becomes Her, The Power of Women's Anger. With what you just described in mind, what did you make of the emotional tone that Christine Blasey Ford had to strike in the hearing?
You know, I thought it was fascinating. She is at the same time both a witness and an expert. So it's quite formidable. She understands the dynamics of trauma. She's dedicated her life to understanding it, and she herself has experienced it. And so I think she probably had a very nuanced and exquisite sense of how carefully she had to present herself to be considered credible and rational. And so you could see her struggling with actually fear. She was upfront about it. She was terrified. And yet she maintained her composure throughout. And that's really admirable. But it's also sad because, in fact, she had every right to be fearful and she had every right to be angry at the course of her life and the backlash that she's already gotten from being named in this procedure. But I think that for many women, looking at her was just a validation of everyday experience.
Yeah.
You know, and what's interesting too is that in intimate interactions and sometimes in the professional world, women get so angry that they do cry. And I think that most men don't understand in the tears exactly how angry they are. You know, the two get conflated. Whereas if you look at Kavanaugh, he had tears and then he had rage.
Mm-hmm.
They were really separate.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean his tears were not also fueled by rage, but they were quite distinct. And he didn't feel the need to silence his rage and subsume his rage in tears. But for many women, that's exactly what happens. They cannot get the words out. They cannot articulate anger. And so tears become a kind of physiological response to that.
Yeah.
And that did not happen to her.
What's striking to me is how high the stakes were for her in having her story go public. But then once it was, how important it was for her to be in the driver's seat and how that story got told.
Mm-hmm. And I think she understood that, mm-hmm. like as an expert, not just as a person who had legitimate concerns about safety or privacy, but because she had intensely studied what it means to have a trauma-informed perspective and to listen to the person whose life has been affected by this kind of assault.
So all eyes at this point are going to be on the two women members of the Republican caucus in the Senate who might conceivably flip on their nominee and prove decisive in ending the candidacy of Brett Kavanaugh for the Supreme Court. That would be Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Susan Collins of Maine. Mm-hmm. At least that's who it would be if we don't get any major surprises. What kind of position are they in?
You know, I find this endlessly fascinating because there's so much pressure on them to save the day, to rescue us from the malevolence of their party's misogyny.
Mostly pressure from people who did not
vote for
them.
And so, again, there is this double standard. I mean, my question is, where are the men in this party who understand, really understand this malevolence and stand up and do the right thing? Because it's the right thing to do for women. It's the right thing to do for democracy. And there seems to be this washing of hands, again, as though there is a fundamental assumption of sex segregation. The women have to help the women. It's a women's issue. Let the women talk amongst themselves. I mean, it's kind of so archaic in its fundamental structure that it's mind-boggling that this is what we're talking about. I mean, these women do have a responsibility to other women, but so do the men. And so I'm not sure why the pressure is so much on them. And I understand why, as women, they might be more knowledgeable, but there are also many feminist men who are very knowledgeable. And yet, in this case, we just have such low expectations of the men on the right. And I think they're proving why. I mean, I don't think there's any denying that having 11 men on the Judiciary Committee is an appalling fact. You know, three of whom were there during the Anita Hill confirmations. And so it's indicative, I think, of the bigger problem, which is that our growing political divide is actually deeply a gender divide.
Soraya Shamali, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Soraya Shamali's new book is Rage Becomes Her, The Power of Women's Anger.